So, hey, Christopher.
Yes, Shayna.
Did you hear that Russia, the Russian government, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to sanction a bunch of American officials, none of whom, by the way, have any wealth or anything really in Russia?
Yes, you know, I was aware of that fact.
Well, so one of the people sanctioned was the former Secretary of State, Madam Secretary Hillary Clinton. Did you hear her response?
I did not hear her response, Shayna. What was it?
Madam Secretary Hillary Clinton tweeted, "I would like to thank the Russian Academy for this Lifetime Achievement Award." Boom. Mic drop. I think that's how a diplomat says, "Screw you." Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
You have joined the podcast that attempts to break down the current narrative, to break it out of its confines of economics and politics, in order to get into a conversation that includes something about, you know, human flourishing.
Yes, the reduction of public conversations to the merely political and the merely economic is reductive. The high bar that we aspire to on One in God's Name is to change the way we have public conversations. And we want you to join us in that aspirational endeavor.
Join us in reclaiming the social narrative.
If you'd like to learn more about What in God's Name, you can go to our website, whatingods.com, and there you will find a trailer about our show. Simple things to help get our message out. Please subscribe to What in God's Name on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review to help the algorithms find us. We also have a tip jar on Venmo. You can leave us a tip if you like a little show that we've done. You can buy us a cup of coffee. At Ribeye Media is our handle there. R-I-B-E-Y-E. M-E-D-I-A, Ribeye Media. One word. We have a spinny wheel, and we start the show with a little randomness, playfulness, which is what we do. The spinny wheel has 16 different places where the pointer can land, and they are core values, key ideas. Wherever our sprinkler head slash pointer lands, that's what we do a riff on.
That's what we riff on. Chris, whose turn is it to spin the wheel?
I think it's yours. Don't tell me it's Be Curious. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That is.
There is a mystery. Those of you who've been listening to the show for some time have probably picked up on this by now. It seems that the spinny wheel has its own wisdom, and it generally lands on something that is a wonderful opener for the show. And today, no exception. Be Curious.
Couldn't have been better for today's show. Be Curious is one of our core values. And Be Curious. Approach the world with curiosity, not with defensiveness. Curiosity is this spirit of openness to others, to creation, to questioning. That is a core value. Oh, it's so important. I love our value of curiosity.
I do too. And I really want to encourage our listeners to be aware of how much in our culture encourages us to have a point of view, encourages us to have an opinion.
And to dig in.
So, you know, winners, losers, it's all set in this binary, right? And Chris and I believe that you know, a holy curiosity to walk through life with a holy curiosity, no matter what the topic on the table is going to serve us all much better. We might, you know, actually be able to hear people with different points of view, et cetera, et cetera. And it's such so perfect for our topic today. We're between one episode and the start of a series. The previous episode to this, we were looking at the necessity of evaluating individual mental health against the backdrop of social mental health. So, you know, a behavior might be considered normative given the social context in which it exists, But that behavior may be, if the social context is unhealthy, then...
Yeah, if you're well-adjusted to a sick society, that does not make you well.
Well, yes, it does not. Well said, Chris. Well said. We're also about to begin a series on the environment. And the series we're about to begin was intentionally done through a interdisciplinary lens. So we've interviewed people from all different kinds of backgrounds, lawyers and artists and
activists of various stripes, climate scientists who are Christians.
Yes, and young activists who would not necessarily put their faith identity out there, out forward. So we're taking a look at the environment through all these different lenses. We thought today might be interesting to talk about the value of an interdisciplinary approach and what it is. And the spinny wheel lands on staying curious. So staying curious is a really good place to go when you are working on an interdisciplinary team. I first encountered interdisciplinary approaches at Hampshire College when I was a student there, and we were required to do one interdisciplinary course. So there was a topic for the course, and a bunch of us jumped into it, and we were studying different things. We were on different trajectories, and we all brought whatever expertise we thought we had to the table. And it was fascinating and insightful. And talk about something that cultivates curiosity. You know, when you have all these different people who've been studying all these different things, how do the folk in the social justice, social sciences versus the natural sciences? Because those are two different modes of inquiry, right? Radically different modes of inquiry. What I did some research, Chris, on interdisciplinary approaches, and it was interesting. The topics that came up most often were education and healthcare. So
those are the places where the most interdisciplinary work is happening?
Yes, I guess so.
Or at least it's the most written about.
Yeah, it's the one that's the most written about. And it was really interesting, particularly in the healthcare narrative. They were highlighting the difference between multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary. Multidisciplinary means, yeah, you've amputated your finger, and so now you're going to have a surgeon, you're going to have a neurologist, you're going to have occupational therapy, you're going to have wound management, you're going to have physical therapy. You have all these different practitioners now who are involved in helping you recover from this tragic injury, but they're not working together. You're benefiting from multidisciplinary because all these people are working on you, but nobody is paying attention to what the other person is doing. Whereas in an interdisciplinary paradigm, and I've worked in that as a hospice chaplain, which is an interdisciplinary, we meet weekly and we go down through the patient list and you hear from everyone who is serving that patient so that we have a game plan with each person that is considerate of what everyone else on the team is doing.
So the multidisciplinary is many, just a bunch. Whereas the inter of the interdisciplinary is connected, is the way I would understand it, the distinction that you're making there.
Yeah, it recognizes interdependence.
Yeah.
That everything we do is going to impact everything else.
Now, I don't want to take us too far afield, but I was thinking about your experience at Hampshire College and this approach to education in this way, and it strikes me as a response to what is really a more modern kind of way of dividing knowledge into all of these discrete and distinct modes of inquiry and ways of understanding. And I think there's an intuitive desire to kind of bridge those separate little distinct pieces of knowledge. Intuitive because I think
they are connected.
Because they are, because we are connected. Feel the connection.
Right.
So it's more than, I think it starts as an intuitive sense of the interconnectedness of all ways of knowing and experiencing the world.
I don't know if it was intuitive for me back then.
Yeah, yeah.
But the elevator speech, Hampshire College breaks all knowledge down into four fields, natural science, social science, humanities, and arts, and language and communication. And the theory is every single one of those, that all knowledge can be put into one of those four categories, and that each of those four categories has a different mode of inquiry. They have a different way of asking the question. And the motto of Hampshire, which I love, non sede sicure, to know is not enough. How do you know what you know? So that almost requires you to sort of adopt this posture of inquiry, right? You know, we're constantly inquiring. It does develop lifelong learners. It was a great school. I feel very, very grateful to have gone there. But in the context of today's conversation and the spinny wheel, you know, staying curious and going deep really cannot happen when we're just launching opinions at one another. And when we see these different modalities or these different happenings in our world as isolated from the whole. So one of the other examples, as I said, that where you see writing public, you know, published articles on interdisciplinary approaches has to do with education. And one of the things that the educators said is that students who are taught from a interdisciplinary approach learn to tolerate uncertainty. They learn to tolerate the notion that there may be more than one thing at play here, you know, which is incredibly helpful in our day, because the problems we are facing are not the kind of problems we can go back to, you know, the crew who dealt with this last time. I mean, the pandemic. Yes, we've had pandemics before, but never before has the world been this connected. So while we've had pandemics here, or we've had a pandemic there, I think this is the first time we ever had a worldwide pandemic where the thing just flew around the globe within, what, a matter of about a month and a half, 6 weeks, something like that.
So we've got these climate dialogues coming up, this series of shows, Shana, that you outlined and alluded to. We are practicing, like what we do with What in God's Name is practicing this interdisciplinarity. Ooh, see,
that's a nice twist. I like that.
We are doing this not as a gimmick, oh, let's be interdisciplinary, but rather as a way to respond to the reality that things are connected. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a theological.
It is absolutely. But let's be honest, Chris, it's also how we keep ourselves sane.
So it's psychological as well.
Well, because you could drop into any one of the crazy making issues out there today and it can make you crazy. Or you can step back, step back, step back, try to get the balcony view, see how these things are connected. You know, for example, will we ever be able to address issues confronting the environment if we don't simultaneously address colonial, dominant, exploitative thinking that has been such a core of so many, right, of America, of Britain, of, you know, the colonizers, right? We have this colonizing mentality that came, you know, with us to all these different shores that we colonized. Can we deal with the environment and not deal with people's sense that they have a right to exploit the earth? These things are, they're connected. What was the word that came out? During the Black Lives Matters thing. They said, you know, there is a intersectionality of these things.
When I was reflecting in preparation for today's show and thinking about interdisciplinarity, this is in response to what you just said, thinking about, okay, what is a discipline that we don't often bring to public conversations or don't, I will say don't often. And to me, it's moral reflection, which is what you, I think, are alluding to when you say, you know, the colonial exploitative kinds of mindsets. That begs for a moral critique. The second and related is, again, a philosophical term, teleology, which is the consideration of the aims or purposes of something. So when you think about a teleological reflection about human life, we're really asking about what is the human being for? What is the aim or purpose of human life? And we address that on One in God's Name by talking about human flourishing, mm-hmm. which can be unpacked in a lot of different ways. Like, we do leave it at that level. What does human flourishing consist of? That's another show. Interesting. Yeah. That could be a whole series. But at any rate, so thinking about what are the disciplines that need to be brought into the conversation, we critique political and economics as the frame for public conversations. From my point of view, that's because they leave out the disciplines of moral reflection and teleological reflection, which to me is then connected to theological, because I can't think about me personally. You're my translator. You translate this into non-theological, non-Christian language. I can't think about the aims and purposes of human life individually or collectively without reference to divinity, to God's presence or absence. Other people can, and we want to be in dialogue with them. We're not here to be hegemonic about our perspective and trying to ram it down people's throats in terms of
that
the content.
That divinity or our notion of divinity should be the dominant aspect of the conversation. No, that's not what we're here to do. But we are here to ask that it, you know, be invited to the table, because that is definitely a conversation, particularly up here in New England. I think it's different in other parts of the country, but, you know, maybe like Midwest and South, where people are just a whole lot more, like, faith is much more public and much more prominent in terms of how people identify. Here in New England, it seems like it's very personal. It's very understated. We understate. So, you know, we'll talk about what degrees we've earned, but we won't talk about what church we go to, right? You know, so that's New England. But without that moral and ethical reflection, be it through theology, philosophy, psychology, many other teleology, you know, all the ologies out there, without looking, getting the lens as wide as we can, we're going to miss some stuff.
One other piece of the way we do things, you and I, and how we're presenting ourselves to the world and encouraging others to join us in this, because we don't want to be alone doing it, related to interdisciplinarity, is our approach and the way we do it in the climate dialogues of dialogue. There's that word. The dialogical way of being in conversation, another way to say it is conversationality. And it's related to interdisciplinarity because it's about bringing, when you have two people together in conversation, in the kind of deep listening that we encourage, there's a way of being in that conversation that's connecting, connects.
Okay, so now we'll go into the theology of this. Usually your terrain, but I'm going to take the jump, right? So Henry Nelson Wyman talked about this. He was a process theologian, and he talked about, he called it creative interchange. And I am going to oversimplify. I'm going to paint creative interchange with a really broad brush, but I'm going to suggest that probably most of our listeners have experienced a moment of creative interchange. It is when you're talking to someone and you're having that, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're speaking into something that you either haven't articulated yet, or perhaps you haven't even thought through all the way, but what they're saying is opening up something for you which didn't exist before they spoke it. And in that moment, there is that sort of that moment of creative interchange, which Wyman said was sacred. That is the presencing of God, or one way that we presence God between us.
Yeah, and that's that holy curiosity at work. Uh-huh. In the climate dialogues, that comes through in a couple of places. In the first climate dialogue that will drop next week, we have Lila Corman Glazer of 350 New Hampshire and Tori Goble of Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. And they are in this beautiful moment of questioning each other. Like, it wasn't you and me. It was the grace that they brought to their own conversation where Lila, in this stance of, again, generous, creative curiosity, asks Tori a question about her work and how she proceeds. I'm not going to give it all away. But
it was really, it was such a yummy interview. I mean, the two of these young women are so phenomenal, so articulate, so bright, so committed. And from, you know, one from a very religious perspective and one from a very secular perspective. And yet there was not disagreement. There was not disharmony. It was a multi, you know, it was a interdisciplinary realization. I think there was a moment of creative interchange there, which you're talking about. But our listeners will just have to tune in next week.
Yeah. And that characterized all three of the climate dialogues that we've done so far, which will drop in consecutive weeks beginning next Thursday. And Shana, I just want to try to bring this plane onto the landing strip here.
Final approach.
Land this one as well as we can. We can make a difference. What we've described with interdisciplinarity and conversationality or dialogue, deep listening, that way can transform our public conversations. That's the real high bar that the What in God's Name Project is about. And we know that our next step as a project is not for just Shana and me to do this, but to help others, join with others, help others do it, and join with others who are doing it. There are not a lot of people doing it, or we don't hear about them a lot. It is happening. But I guess I just want to say we can make a difference. We can change the way that our public conversations happen.
Can I close with one quick story? I was working on Mayor Pete's campaign. I may have told this story on the air before, but it's been a while. I was working on Mayor Pete's campaign, so I was attending a Pete rally up in Concord, New Hampshire. I was standing in line waiting to get into the hotel ballroom where Pete was going to be addressing the crowd. When I turned around, I am a vertically challenged individual. I'm only 5'2". Standing behind me was this young man who had to be 6'2", 6'3", and, you know, looked like the size of a professional football player. Just this huge guy is standing behind me with his MAGA cap on and his Trump t-shirt on. And my initial response was not necessarily a charitable one, shall we say. And so I took a deep breath and turned around, introduced myself to him, and he introduced himself to me and said, "Look, I couldn't, you look like you might be a Trump supporter." He laughed. He said, "Yeah, I am." I said, "So what brings you here today?" Well, you know, he's a college student, and this particular class he was in, they were going around, they were hearing all of the candidates. And that was great to me. I said, "Well, who have you heard?" And so we get into this conversation. Now, I'm a gender nonconforming little person standing next to this very large man in Trump regalia. I've got my rainbow clergy collar on, and there's lots of journalists walking to and fro, and gradually they stopped and just, they wanted to know, like, what's going on here? And we were like, nothing, what? And they were like, "Well, you guys look like you were in deep in conversation." We were like, "Oh, yeah, we were having a conversation." "Well, what were you talking about?" "Oh, all kinds of things. You know, and this is my new friend, and he's a Trump supporter, and I'm not, but we've had these conversations, and we discovered that we have all these places of agreement, and we were just working on this one area where we're not in agreement, but, you know, it was a perfectly collegial conversation." And we got filmed. I mean, we got picked up by NPR. We got picked up by BBC. You know, people were so, like, it was news. It was news that there was a Trump supporter and this little lesbian clergy lady having a civil conversation at a Pete rally. Like, that was newsworthy, okay? Curiosity, a holy curiosity, The willingness to engage in interdisciplinary approaches, the willing to come into a conversation with the humility to accept that we don't know everything there is to know about anything, can change. It's certainly going to change the dialogue. And I think, as I've said before, you change the dialogue, change the world. So, Chris, stay curious.
Stay curious. So.
Stay curious.
And guess who told us that?
The spinny wheel.
Go deep, Shana.
And shine light, Chris.
Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com. Of course, you can also send us a cup of coffee on Venmo at Ribeye Media. A big thanks to our associate producer, Brandon Edwards. You can sign up for our newsletter at our website, whatingods.com, Shana, which is
WHATINGODS.
Great to be with you today, Shana.
Always great to be with you.